I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The HIV epidemic is not over. HIV is still here.
The face of HIV is so diverse.
The biggest thing to reduce HIV stigma is just to talk about it. Testing and PrEP and HIV treatment and how effective it is today.
Undetectable equals untransmittable. Whether you're positive or negative, there's not a wrong door. Whether it's testing or whether it's treatment, do it for you, Montgomery County.
Learn more about HIV testing, treatment, and prevention at doitforyoumc.org.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello and welcome to the 5 Yard Dynasty podcast with me, Rich Cooling. Told you we had a very big show lined up for the wide receiver preview. Today I'm delighted to be joined by, to be honest, one of the most positive men I think I've ever had the delight of having any interaction with, and let's be honest, one of the best followers on Twitter. So that's Mike, or as most of you all know him at Daddy's Home FF. So how you doing, Mike?
What's up, Rich? How you doing, buddy?
Very good, thank you. Very good. Absolutely delighted to have you on. Very excited for this one.
Well, I told you I've had this circled on my calendar. I think, what did we talk about this, about a month ago? And I've been looking forward to this show. I'll admit, like, it took a little more studying than most because I wasn't quite up on the rookie class the way I wanted to. So it was a nice little kick in the behind also to get the ball rolling on the rookie class this year. So
yeah, absolutely. Same for me. I think this was, I had these, been doing the rookie previews for each position. It was, yeah, as you said, the kick in the backside to get me motivated to break down film and work through all the guys so I could, you know, get the top guys to talk through. So today I think we're going to talk through sort of the top 10, 11 receivers in this class. But I mean, before we dive into it, Mike, what do you think about kind of the class as a whole? Obviously, we had a pretty phenomenal class last year. Do you think this could potentially stack up to that?
No, I don't actually like this class this year, to be honest. So when we look at it overall, this is a very quarterback heavy draft. So in Superflex, obviously, I like having one of those top five picks, especially seeing what Trey Lance did today in his pro day look like a stud.
Very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah. Not much to like on the running back side. So I'm happy you got Matt to do that instead of me, because it would have been a pretty big downer. I'm sure he talked up Michael Carter for 3 hours, but not really my style. In this wide receiver class, talented but flawed is the best way that I would put it. I am very much team big wide receiver. Give me AJ Brown, give me DK Metcalf, you know, give me the guys who are going to go up and get it. So what we're looking at here is a lot of guys who project more to be slot receivers, and everyone thinks they're getting the next Tyreek Hill. And honestly, that there's only one Tyreek Hill. There's only one player who has that level of skill set. And I think, unfortunately, there's only about a handful of offenses that know how to use those types of players. And the best spot was taken up last year by Brandon Ayuk, obviously, having a player of that style that you're going to move around the field. was a great fit for Kyle Shanahan's offense and for San Francisco. And when you look at, you know, teams like, for example, Ruggs landing in Vegas, possibly the worst fit for him in a John Gruden style offense. So with this class, what I'm most concerned about is that I have no doubt in the talent, but it's not a lot of straightforward usage. It's not a lot of guys that you line up those 6-3 go get it guys. And obviously we'll talk about the top of the class. You have, you know, a couple of those there, but when we get to that middle group and you and I are, have a few guys that we're really interested in seeing where they go, I just can't remember a class that was so landing spot dependent, and not because of their talent. Obviously we made that mistake with AJ Brown, devaluing him when he went to the Titans. It's going to be their usage. So many of these guys have made their living behind or at the line of scrimmage, as opposed to your standard in cuts, out cuts, posts. So it's going to be a whole different style than what we're used to. And this year has been so crazy that doing the evaluations is different. Obviously teams have been hit by COVID. You didn't have a mini camp, you know, so it's going to be a difficult year, but I think it's going to be fun because if you hit it, you could strike gold. But I think this is going to be a disappointing class for a lot of people who are maybe just looking at analytics, who aren't really looking at the film, who aren't going back a year. And like we've talked about, we'll have a few guys that we discuss that opted out. So you have to project up what would have happened this year, even though they didn't play. So it's going to be an interesting class, but I'll be honest, I'm not as amped about it as a lot of people seem to be. And I'm doing a lot more trading out for maybe some rookies that didn't hit last year, as opposed to keeping a lot of my mid picks this year. So the film didn't change a lot for me. Like I said, we picked up on the study, but I think maybe this conversation hopefully will open my eyes to a couple of guys that maybe I wasn't as amped about, and see if maybe that brings a little more enthusiasm.
Yeah, I think you hit on probably the note that I've felt throughout this. I've never known a class where the kind of top of guys that are being talked about as potentially fringe first rounders, there's so many short receivers. You know, we normally talk about most first round receivers being around that 6 foot plus. You know, you talked about a sort of 6'3 prototype. Whereas there's four or five guys that are perhaps fringe first round talent that are shorter than 6 foot. And it's just, I can't remember a class quite like it, in certainly in the last sort of 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's just not what people have been looking for. And honestly, what you're getting here is you're getting a ton of production, but against what competition? And is it going to play in the NFL? And that's kind of what we have to figure out tonight and give people some guidance on, because I think everybody wants to know that. Like, I think when you watch some of these guys, you can clearly see the route running is spectacular. The burst is outstanding. What they do when they get the ball in their hands in space is phenomenal. But what are you going to do contested catch-wise? What are you going to do when you're dealing with press coverage against a cornerback who is arguably just as fast, if not faster, than you are? How are you going to play in that mode where you're lining up regularly against somebody who's just as fast as you and 4 inches taller? Normally, we're looking for that inverse. So this is going to be interesting because you're not going to have the physical advantages that you're used to. Like, I think when you looked at, like we said, Brown and Metcalf, it was pretty obvious that those guys were going to be able to bully people in the NFL. They were bigger. They were stronger. They were this new age athlete, these monstrous human beings that could still run those 4.3, 4.4 40s. That's what we've been so accustomed to. And honestly, that's what we've been getting spoiled by in the past few classes. And now we have this class. And yeah, I think, honestly, I think this is going to be a draft where I'm going to rely a lot on the people that I get my information with and what they're seeing, because I'm going to have to make some picks. And right now I'm just kind of on the fence with a lot of guys. You'll see these tiers kind of get pretty dang close together as we go.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we'll dive straight in. So what we're going to do is we're going to work through kind of my top 11. Yep. There's a few that we differ on, Mike, but we can dive into that later. But for me, the guy at the top of the class, in terms of my gradings, he's the highest graded receiver I've had across the last three draft classes, and that is Ja'Marr Chase. So I guess, what do you think of him? Where does he kind of sit for you?
Yeah, Ja'Marr Chase is the only true alpha that I see in this class, and I think he slots him as a wide receiver one right out of the gate. The biggest thing that I see with Chase as opposed to the others, you know, regardless of the prototype size that we can talk about, he is one of those 6 feet wide receivers. But what Chase does, the way that he lowers his hips, the way he has this body control, he can stop and start at full speed like I haven't seen in years, to be quite honest. The way that he will stop on a dime, change direction. The hardest thing about playing cornerback is you're racing to a finish line where you don't know where it is, and the wide receiver does. And what Chase does is he changes the tempo of the route, and he stops and starts in a way that is fascinating to me. His body control on those deep throws, the way that he can catch the back shoulder fade, like I don't see a lot of holes in his game. I just think he is the one that stands out far and away. And for me, he drops in at my wide receiver 15 landing spot unseen right now for Dynasty. I think he's that talented. I think you hit on it. Is he my top guy? I'm maybe not quite as high as you are over the past 3 years, but for this year, I think there is a number one with the bullet, and that's Ja'Marr Chase. I don't think there's anyone necessarily close to him this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want people thinking that he's my number one at the moment across the last 3 years. I'm not taking him over Justin Jefferson at the moment. I'm saying as a prospect coming out, he's got a higher grade in terms of film and analytics across the last 3 years. For me, I think you touched on it there. He can win on every single element of the route, every single level of the field. I think the thing for me that is most impressive, it's such a ridiculous thing to talk about, but his hip flexibility as a receiver is phenomenal. His ability to, you talked about it, those subtle kind of footworks, but also his ability to change direction without losing speed and to manipulate the corner, because he's got this incredible hip flexibility that allows him to go up and make those catches as well. It's such a subtle thing, but it makes such a big success in terms of him winning at all those points. You know, he can win early, he can win late in the route. From a statistical standpoint, you know, yes, he's only had 1 year of production, obviously opted out last year, but what a year it was. You know, mm-hmm. This is a guy that forced Justin Jefferson into the slot in that phenomenal offense. And we've already seen what Justin Jefferson can do in the NFL. So yeah, I'm so excited to see him. I've not introduced rookies into my kind of overall dynasty ranking yet. I was talking with Kev of the Fantasy Wildcard. I think I'm eyeing up sort of that 10 to 12 spot, if I'm being honest, as long as he's a top 10 pick. If he's not a top 10 pick, it'll knock him down a bit. But yeah, I'm all in on Ja'Marr Chase, to be honest.
So I'll tell you, I think that the top 10 pick is pretty much rock solid. I don't see him dropping past number 6. To be honest, I think that's probably his base. So I'm not worried about him falling in the top 10. What's interesting is when you look at where I slotted him, he is in pretty good company with T. Higgins, Michael Thomas, and Chris Godwin. And with Godwin going back to the Bucs, which is not a spot that I love for him, he certainly has some flexibility in that tier. So I don't think we're that far off. When I look at the tier that I put him in, it's more of that 12 to 16 tier. So landing spot dependent, he could easily jump up into that number 12 role for me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all I've got all the names around him that you said as well. So for me, this next coming up, there's quite a big tier break to the group in the next. My wide receiver 2 at the moment, I'll be honest, he's one of my favorite prospects in the draft. I think he's, you know, he's got a phenomenal analytical profile. He has performed fantastically when he was sharing an offense with Tyler Johnson, and that's Rashad Bateman. So what do you kind of think of Bateman as a prospect?
So Bateman, to me, coming in this tier of the guys we're going to talk about, and I don't have him at number 2, I have him at number 3, but obviously we're not that far off. We're splitting hairs there. He has the least amount of concerns in terms of this tier 2 grouping, right? 6'2", 210. He looks like he has the skills to be a high-end wide receiver 2, low-end 1. What I love about him is he has that jab step and a knack for finding open areas. So what you'll see when you're watching Bateman play is he'll almost lull the cornerback to sleep. If he's doing a drag route, like if he's coming across the middle, he'll almost run at half speed and just let the play develop. It's almost like watching Le'Veon Bell wait for a hole to open. If you remember, you know, peak Le'Veon Bell, he has that patience that I love. But if he's looking to drive a cornerback back, he has a really nice jab step, when he's running that dig route that will get the cornerback leaning backwards. He'll get them to turn their hips, and then he's money in the bank. So watching the way that he plays, it's very rare that you see a cornerback like right on this guy. Like, his bread and butter is separation, like I haven't seen before, finding holes in the zone. So he excels at that better than most of the prospects I've seen in this particular tier. And I think right now, when you look at kind of when you're investing a draft pick, you're not putting a ton of risk when you have Rashad Bateman. Like, he's a guy who's going to come in and honestly have a floor of like a Marvin Jones, who has been a player that you've had in your lineup for what, 10 years now. I mean, and I don't know if he has, what I don't know about Bateman is, does he have that elite level ceiling? Like, he looks like one of those guys that would probably, I'm putting him in around 25 for my dynasty wide receivers when I look at my rankings. And I think he just lives there. Like, I don't know that he's a guy who's going to climb into that top 15 ranking, because what I don't see from him is an elite skill in particular. Like, he's skillful, but I don't see something like we talked about with Chase, with the stop start, with the body control. Like, what I see from Bateman is a very good, solid wide receiver. So not somebody that I tend to get amped about, that I think is going to be a league winner. But I think he's a guy as your fantasy wide receiver too, you're going to be pretty happy with. Like, he's going to put up solid numbers and have a solid career. And that's kind of how I would sum up Bateman, is I don't see anything that makes me think that he's going to jump into that elite level. I think he's going to be a very solid player, couple Pro Bowlers, you know, 1,000 to 1,100 yards, 7 to 8 touchdown type seasons. I just don't see him turning into like a Devontae Adams type player. I think he'll be a tier down from that. But given a rookie that you could slot in and feel comfortable because of that elite, that high level floor, I like him at this level because, again, these prospects all have a ton of risk. I don't think you'd be wasting a draft pick on Rashad Bateman. I just don't think he's a guy that you're going to regret drafting. But I also don't think that he's going to have this huge ascension in the wide receiver rankings.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, you know, you've hit the nail on the head for me there. It's in terms of projection, I'm not having to project him into the next level, having to change. Oh, will he be able to adjust to this? Will he fit in the right situation? I think wherever he lands, wherever he goes, he's going to be able to fit in, and you can carve out a nice role. He's going to be, you know, 80 to 100 target guy probably as a rookie, and I'm very comfortable with that. At the end of the day, if I'm spending a mid to late first on a wide receiver, and I'm getting a guy that's going to be around that wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 range for the next 5 years, I'm pretty delighted. And I think that, yeah, he's not got that elite speed. And I think for me, that is kind of my one question. I think if he had that elite speed and I felt that he could scare corners, that he's going to go over the top. And I think that's the one thing that he's lacking. Mm-hmm. But as you said, I'm very happy with where I think he's going to kind of settle in at the next level.
Yeah, I think our goal would be, when you're looking at Bateman, like if you were to pick up Bateman, let's say in a pre-NFL draft, rookie draft, and you had him on your team. I'm actually in one where I think he might end up on my squad right now. I'm trying to wait till the end of that round, see if I grab him. I think our high end here is what we could potentially be looking for is a Terry McLaurin situation, where realistically he's thrust into a high volume. Like you said, 80 to 100 as a rookie, I'm banking on regardless of where he lands. But I think his ceiling, if you talk about, you know, what could he reach, it's that Terry McLaurin, like forced into a 130, 140 target role and getting his numbers that way. I think that's about, you know, the biggest reach I can put for him. But there are some spots available where he could land there and have that type of volume. And if he did, then you'd be looking at possibly like a dynasty wide receiver 15. But I just can't bet on that right now. You kind of have to bet the field because there's maybe 2 or 3 of those spots available. So I'm going to lean more towards he'll be the second option in an offense and have a really solid, nice wide receiver 20 type career.
Yeah. So moving on to my wide receiver, I think he's your wide receiver 2, and that's Devonta Smith, obviously the Heisman winner. So talk to me about Devonta Smith.
Oh, man. So Devonta Smith, if he had the weight we would be talking about him with Chase. He is as clean of a wide receiver as you were going to see in this draft. Like, he is as smooth as it gets. He goes up and gets the ball. Like, he does everything well. He's just got the tiniest calves I've ever seen in my entire life. So that's really what pushes Smith down to tier two for me. But in terms of, he does have the height, obviously he's playing at 6'1". He's looking like he could be a top end option for a lower team, or at least the highest end wide receiver two we might see, which is going to slot him in about wide receiver 20 in my dynasty rankings. Think of like a dollar for dollar trade with a Brandon Ayuk. Like, that's really what I see Smith being. But if you look at him, and if you could somehow take his film and stretch his body to where you had a 200-pound frame, I'm not sure you're going to find many holes. And this guy still produced in an offense that has had nothing but talent. You're talking Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, and Smith is still putting up numbers. Now, you hear people argue, would Devonta Smith won the Heisman if Waddle was healthy all year? I mean, that's a hard thing to project, right? But the fact is, the guy did. He put up numbers. He showed he could be a number one, and he honestly put up numbers when people knew where the ball was going. Obviously, in the previous year, they were putting up numbers altogether in this massive system where everybody was eating. But when he became the no doubt top option, he still put up numbers, and he put up numbers when it counted, obviously, in the big games as well. So I love Devonta Smith. The only pause I have that drops him from tier one to tier two is that size. But otherwise, there's not a part of his game that I look at and I'm like, oh man, that is a massive problem. I just see a very clean, crisp wide receiver, and I love the kid's game.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts described him as smooth criminal, said he's the smoothest receiver he's ever seen. I think to me that sums it up perfectly, because that is him in a nutshell. He is a fantastic route runner, and he's just smooth throughout the entire route. Just no kind of quirks, no nothing, just fantastic. I hear you with the weight question, and I think that that's, you know, certainly a common concern. I'll be honest, a month ago I was fully in with you, and I was all out on him because of his, you know, I know there's a lot on Twitter about BMI and things like that. And basically over the last month I've really dived into it quite a lot. And the truth is that weight actually, if you analyze it, BMI and weight doesn't actually necessarily reflect on kind of future performance. Yes, there is no kind of comparison in terms of, there is no receiver in the NFL that has been over 6 foot tall, 175 pounds, and produced like Devonta Smith did in college. So he is a one of one. But for me, I think if he was that weight and he played like it on the field, I'd have more concerns. But he's more than willing to go out and block. He's very good at the kind of tackle point. I think that he actually plays a lot stronger than his weight would suggest. So it's less of a concern for me. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit concerned, and I get that he was, you know, in a fantastically kind of talented wide receiving corps, but he didn't produce really as a kind of a freshman and a sophomore. And he, you know, we talk about breakout age. He obviously didn't break out until 20. Which is a little bit of a concern for me. But you know, you've just got to look at it. Last year, he hit almost a 40% market share in terms of yards. His yards per team attempt was 4.5. It's absolutely phenomenal from a statistical standpoint. But I just don't think he's quite as complete a prospect for me as Chase, which is why he's in that sort of tier two.
So let's talk about both of those points, because I absolutely despise BMI Twitter. It's just not my thing. It's literally like that little bit of, you know, analytics are saying he is an outlier that gives me pause. I'm still putting him at, like I said, wide receiver 21 in my dynasty rankings. So there's no way that I'm out on him. Like, some people are thrown into the wolves. In terms of the breakout age, I had actually tweeted out while I was doing a lot of the studies on the film, is that the one thing that stuck out to me, and I was watching all the wide receivers, and one thing popped off the screen more than anything, and that is how much more talented Jerry Jeudy is than I remember. He was so outstanding and obviously got stuck with a bad lot in Denver with Sutton going down, with Lock not being able to get him the ball. Highest percentage of uncatchable targets. A lot went wrong with Jerry Jeudy, but when you look at what he was doing at Alabama in 2019, he was so good and so talented that it only left so much for Smith. So I'm not so worried about the breakout age, because that receiving core, there was just so many weapons there that I don't see a concern of anybody falling back by the wayside when you're talking about those four guys all fighting for targets, with Jeudy obviously being the alpha. Yeah. So what that tells you is two things. Number one, I'm not worried about DeMonta Smith. Number two, go get Jerry Jeudy, because if they get him a quarterback, he is going to explode. Of anybody that I watched film on, he popped the most for me in all of these studies, and that includes Ja'Marr Chase. Jerry Jeudy was just that guy. I think that if you had put DeVonta Smith on any other team, like we were talking about Bateman, right? Like, what does DeVonta Smith do in that offense, getting that many targets against that competition? I think you would have seen an earlier breakout age. So I'm not so concerned with that, just because I can't remember a foursome of talent at the college level like Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, and DeVonta Smith all at one time. So I don't knock him too much for that target share early on in his career, just because there were so many mouths to feed at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. How many college offenses are going to have four, what was it, top 20 picks, probably? Yeah. It's just wild, unheard of, right? Isn't it? Yeah. So the next wide receiver, I'll be honest, this is the receiver that I've had the hardest time ranking, because from a film perspective, his film is mind-blowing. From a statistical perspective, he had probably the best freshman year I think I can remember in terms of production. But he's basically not really played for 2 years. And that's Rondale Moore. So where are you at with him?
Rondale Moore is so puzzling to me. So when I look at Rondale Moore, and as I told you, I'm team big wide receiver, I'm very concerned with what I see as a very explosive athlete, but so much of his production was motion, bubble screens, swing passes, where they almost used him like an H-back. Going through the film with Rondale Moore, you don't see very many deep passes. You don't see a ton of deep targets. You see a guy that they're using, and you know, it's weird. I'm going to reference this guy a lot because of this particular class and their skill set, in Ayuk Debo Samuel type usage. Everything is behind the line of scrimmage and almost using them like he's a punt returner, like get him the ball where there's no one right in his face and see what he can do. Rondale Moore's landing spot will be huge, possibly bigger than any other prospect. He is strong and he's shifty and he's definitely a polished individual. Like we're going to get to Tutu and Waddle, who are going to be the same type of freakish athletes. I think that Moore is the most polished and honestly the most strong lower half that I've seen of any of those guys. But where he did his work scares me. It was not a traditional wide receiver skill set. So while his numbers look solid, and like you said, his athleticism screams off the page, like, look at how good this guy is. It wasn't done with your standard route running. It wasn't done with like an X type receiver. He was very much a guy that they were creating an offense for, as opposed to fitting into a pro style offense.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, how do you use this guy? Who grabs him? How do they use him? And do they know what to do with a weapon like this? And Lynn Bowden was the perfect example. When he went to Vegas, they didn't know what to do with him. I was so thrilled when he went to Miami because I knew Vegas was going to ruin this guy. Who's going to get Rondale Moore? And are they going to use what is more of an offensive weapon than a wide receiver properly? And if they do, sky's the limit. If they try to force him into a standard role, I just don't know if he's that player.
Yeah, you've basically, you know, repeated essentially what I've got written down here in my notes in terms of, I say, elite separation skills, fantastic footwork, but not a route runner. In terms of, he can get open. He has got some of the, his first step is phenomenal. His ability with the ball in his hands is phenomenal, but I'm not convinced that he's actually going to be able to come into the NFL and run a complete route tree, because he, as you said, he wasn't really asked to do it in college. And I think that's why I've struggled with where to put him basically all over the last couple of months, because I could completely see him going into the NFL if he's going to be used out of primarily slot role in a team that's going to feature him and get that 120 targets and be a number one target leader in an offense and be phenomenal. But I can also see him going into an offense that doesn't really want to use him, tries to use him something like the Rams did with Tavon Austin, where instead of feeding him the ball in space, they're trying to manufacture in touches, and it just never quite feels natural. And then he's just wasted and never going to produce as a kind of a fantasy relevant wide receiver. So, yeah, I'm really struggling. I think for me, draft capital is going to say a lot. I think if an NFL team's willing to go out and spend a first round pick on him, and you know, they're basically going to say, we're going to find a role and we're going to build our offense to incorporate him, then I'll be more comfortable swinging for him. But if he drifts into day two, I'm probably going to be less keen and probably start saying I'm out.
I'll be shocked if he is a first round pick. I would honestly be floored by that. When you look at not only the talent that we have in this draft, the depth that we have in this draft, but also who's picking in the late rounds and what their needs are, I think he is going to drift to day two. However, I think that might work out well for him if he lands in the right spot. Yeah, so it's all going to come down to who's his coach. That's what's going to matter to me more than anything else with Rondale Moore. Usually you're talking about, oh, who's in front of him? Like who's the guy in front of him? I don't care about that nearly as much as who the coach is and what style offense they run.
Yeah, team needs a plan for him. You can't just slot him in as your Z receiver, because he's just not that. He is a unique person. Now, I'm getting excited, I'm getting pumped, because we moved to tier three. Now, this is my guy, I'll be honest. So it's Elijah Moore. Talk to me. What do you make of Elijah Moore?
Oh, man. So I have Elijah Moore. I have one more person in tier two that we'll talk about in a minute. But Elijah Moore, my goodness. Everything but size, right? Everything but size. The route running, the explosive playmaking. The comps I'm seeing, and I wish I could come up with my own comps that were better, but I can't. This is Randall Cobb. I mean, that's who it is. And for all you young people listening that see the Texans version of Randall Cobb, watch the Packers version of Randall Cobb, because that was a bad man. That was a stud. Absolute monster. I do see some Doug Baldwin in this game. Just that PPR monster right out of the gate. If you have him on a team who's going to get him the ball, this kid is going to make catches, put up numbers. I love the hands. I love the skill. I don't want to go too deep into him because I know how excited you are to talk about him. But my goodness, this kid is everything you could possibly want, except he's 5'9". I mean, if he wasn't, sky's the limit. But watching Elijah Moore's tape, we just talked about Rondale Moore. I'll tell you what, we're going to be flipping a coin on those two if the situations don't match up perfectly. I think Elijah Moore is that good. I do believe he's that good of a player. Again, he's not going to get first round capital. Let's just prep ourselves for that. But I'll tell
you, breaking my heart, him like.
It's not going to happen. He's going to be a day two guy, which is fine. But I think when you look at Rondale Moore and Elijah Moore, if I like the situation even slightly better for Elijah Moore, I'm probably going to flip the two. That's how close they are. I just see very similar skill sets. But man, this kid is just a solid, solid football player. I love Elijah Moore.
Yeah, I mean, he was probably under the radar for me 2 months ago. Yes, looking at kind of my process always looks statistical profile first and then go and look at the film. And I thought, well, yeah, okay, you know, coming out of a decent college in terms of we've seen some fantastic receivers come out of there in the last few years. You know, decent breakout age, decent market share, you know, some decent stats. And then I plugged on the film and my God, he's just incredible. He wins versus man, he wins versus zone. You know, his ability to manipulate zone coverage in order to, he doesn't just sit in a zone wait for the ball, he's able to essentially adjust, and he'll sometimes drop deeper and sort of manipulate those zones to enable to find those soft spots. I think he is going to be absolutely, wherever he goes, his quarterback's best friend, because you know, whenever it gets tight, whenever it's, you know, third down, he's going to be able to win and get open immediately because his first step is phenomenal. I do have a concern that he is awful against press coverage. You know, it comes, you'd expect it from a guy being 5'9", 185. I think that in the NFL, that will be schemed up for him. I don't think we're going to see him lined up on his own out wide, expecting to go up and beat a corner one-on-one in press coverage. He's going to be used out of the slot. He's going to be used in those tight bunch formations. He's going to be used in motion a lot. And I think that that will enable him to get that free release. That means that he's going to be able to essentially be a true target monster. I don't see any situation where he's not just going to be fed targets, because he's going to be open all the time. And I think that, yes, we're talking about him as a receiver, but for me, that's only half of it, because he's phenomenal. He gets open. He can manipulate defenses to get open. But then he gets the ball in his hands, and he is absolutely, you know, you made the Randall Cobb comparison, and I love it, because the thing that made Randall Cobb so great was when he first broke onto the scene with the Packers, he was being used as a return. He was being used in the run game. He's being used all over the place. And to me, that's Elijah Moore. He is a running back with the ball in his hands. He has got such good footwork and lateral ability that no tackler is comfortable. You know, he, despite his size, he wins at the tackle point because he's able to set up the defender to be off balance from day one. And he's just going to be able to make guys miss at the next level. I can guarantee you now, we're going to see one or two occasions on film next year where someone's got him lined up. You see the corner come down on a screen pass, something got him lined up. You think, oh, the receiver's going to get drilled here. And the corner's just going to fly past him and end up tackling air because he's shot around him. I just think he's phenomenal. And if you're in any of my leagues, I hope you're not listening, because early second round, I'm all over Elijah Moore at the moment.
I think that the best thing about this class is that when you talk about these small wide receivers, you hit the nail on the head that you can't get squared up at this size and survive in D1 football. You're 5'9", 185. If you're getting hit square in the mouth every play, you're making it 3 weeks at best, right? So these guys have learned this shiftiness that is amazing. So yeah, again, when you talk about Elijah Moore, you'd mentioned it has to be motion. You have to get it so he's not squared up. Like if he lines up square with Stephon Gilmore, that dude ain't making it 1 yard. And we both know that. Like he is going to be stymied at the line of scrimmage. So again, you need to make sure that you're getting him the ball the right way, getting it to him in space, and then letting him do his thing, and he'll explode. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think for me, comparing Elijah Moore and Rondale Moore, I think Rondale Moore's a better athlete and I think he's more explosive. But I think Elijah Moore's a little bit more kind of nuanced and better at the kind of finer things. And I think that he could transition better to the NFL. But I think for me, Rondale Moore's just got that, because of that athleticism, because of that kind of freak score, essentially, I think his ceiling's a little bit higher.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Elijah Moore is a polished football player, but yeah. Rondale Moore, and you saw it with the strength he has. I mean, he's a tank for his size. So
yeah, I've seen the squat numbers that are flying around for Rondale Moore. it is off the chain. So diving now down into my tier four. So heading up my tier four. So I've got Tylan Wallace. So for me, he's solid, just unspectacular. What do you think of him?
I mean, that's really the perfect way to explain him, isn't it? And when I look at the box scores, you want to love Tylan Wallace. I mean, averages 100 yards a game 3 years in a row. Like everything looks the way it's supposed to when you go box score watching. And that's why we always say there's more to the game. Right? Like there's more to the game than just box score watching. And when I watch him play, I see hands. I mean, I see really good hands that bring up a solid floor, which we've talked about. Floor is important because it'll keep him on the field. But I do see him getting bullied at the line of scrimmage, and that scares me. Like when I see a player who's getting lit up at the line of scrimmage, that concerns me. Consistency is good, but the ceiling is so low. Like, what does he do well other than catch the ball when it's thrown to him? So you're talking contested catches, but when you get up against stronger cornerbacks and you're getting, you know, punched in the mouth every play, are you going to get open enough? Is he going to create enough separation that the team's going to go to him? He played on an offense where they would feed him despite what he had for separation. They would give him the ball and expect him to go get that. What offense do you see Tylan Wallace landing on that's going to be the case? They're just going to go to a different option because no one is taking Wallace as their wide receiver one. I hope we both agree with that. Like, he 100%. Is a complementary piece. So I'm hoping that he gets the volume he needs. And I love the fact that the kid balled day in and day out. Like, he didn't have bad games from what I saw. I just didn't see anything that popped on film that made me think, I love this kid. The numbers look great. Like, the numbers do. Like I said, 100 yards, 3 years in a row. Shout out to Master June, who did a really nice thread on Tylan Wallace and his consistency. It was spectacular thread. And honestly, he's a great follow anyway. But when I watched the film, I just didn't fall in love. Like, I wanted to. Like, I saw the numbers. And I'm like, oh, let me see what this kid has and what he has his hands. But he doesn't have burner speed. He doesn't have great separation. I didn't see that outstanding, like, the dropping of the hips that you want to see when someone is going into a route, that change of pace ability. None of that, and maybe this is me flawed as someone watching film, but nothing that I saw excited me. Like, nothing I saw that I pointed at and said, oh, look at that. That is what makes Tylan Wallace unique. Didn't see any of that, and I wanted to. I went in wanting to love this guy, and I just can't. He's actually lower, I think, for me than you, because I carried him all the way down to tier four, and we haven't even gotten to two of the guys that I have like above him at this point. So,
yeah, we'll get to those in a minute. I think people can probably guess the two that we're hinting at. But yeah, I think that's it, is that I like him because, you know, he's coming from a college that we've seen produce wide receivers to the NFL. He's put up good numbers. He's solid. I don't think he's going to disappoint. I know what he is. I think he's going to be a good complementary, you know, probably a below average two, an above average three. I think he's going to settle in at that sort of wide receiver four, wide receiver five mark. I think from a fantasy standpoint, he's just going to produce for you. You're never going to feel great about having him in your flex, but he's never going to, you know, shoot you in the foot and kind of cost you a game. But yeah, as you said, I've literally in my notes, I've just said very solid, but for me, doesn't possess an elite trait. And I think that sums it up perfectly. He's very good. You know, he does produce, but that ceiling is completely capped.
Sure. So, I mean, if he doesn't get the volume, then I think we know what that becomes, which is a bi-week fill-in guy that most likely flops in and out of the waiver wire, ends up as a throw and as a tradee. And I just think that, and we were talking about this earlier, when we talked about my overall feeling on this class, I think that the 207, 208 in super flex leagues, which is where you're going to end up looking at a Tylan Wallace, I think you can probably do better in trading for a veteran. That's my guess. Rookie hype gets big. People get excited about possibilities. I think you could take that pick and turn it into something with more upside than you're getting. I think that realistically, when you look at some of the less exciting receivers from last year, Henry Ruggs, obviously, who didn't produce, Denzel Mims, even Bryan Edwards, like, these are guys that I think I would probably take a dollar for dollar trade of Tylan Wallace, because I just think that what I saw from them, despite a disappointing first year, is a more talented wide receiver. So those are guys that, at least with Ruggs, you know you have elite speed. Not on a great team, that situation can change. Obviously, his hands are questionable at best, but at least you have an elite trait. And that's what I look for, is Henry Ruggs could explode and be far greater than Tylan Wallace, even though his floor is lower. If I'm looking for a bench guy, which is what I think the tier we're entering right now, give me somebody who might really appreciate in value and blow up, as opposed to somebody who you kind of know what he is. I mean, Tylan Wallace is like the Kirk Cousins of wide receivers, right? Like, you know what he is. He's good enough, but you don't exactly feel thrilled when you leave and you're like, hey, look, you know, look what I have. It's just decent. That's the best I can explain.
And I think for me, this is, you know, I'll talk about it in April when we break down sort of rookie draft strategy. And for me, this is the point at which I'm just not touching receivers in draft. Because for that point you hit there, is I want a guy at this point that realistically, I'm probably never going to rely on them as a starter. I'm probably not going to need them, but I want that blow-up potential. And at this point in the draft, that is, to me, a running back. I would much rather take, you know, a Chuba Hubbard or somebody like that, that chances are, you know, 80% of the time, he's probably giving you nothing at the next level. But that 20% that he gets a good landing spot, hits in his rookie season, his price is going to skyrocket. And that's where, as you said, Tylan Wallace, he's probably going to come in. He'll probably stick around in the NFL for, you know, 8 years, be a, you know, a decent NFL performer. But from a fantasy perspective, he's never going to be exciting, is he?
Yeah, no, I think the name that I have that I've been seeing in drafts, I've been doing a lot of mocks, as you know, the name that I've been going after, and you're pretty close to, but I like Jamar Jefferson is the guy I've been taking in most of those spots when the opportunity to draft Tylan Wallace arises. It's been Jamar Jefferson, Brevin Jordan, and Pat Freiermuth have been the three names that normally I tend to lean towards over Tylan Wallace, to give you an idea of kind of where I'm seeing things. That's about the grouping that you see him going in, and I tend to lean more to the tight end and running back, like you said, and Chuba would definitely be in that group as well over a Wallace at wide receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was a little bit higher on Jamar Jefferson. He's my running back five at the moment, so I'm quite happy taking him sort of
earlier than that. Moment, so he's been going to 208 for me, which is about where I'm seeing Wallace, which I love. I love the value.
I'm conscious we're in a league together, Mike, so I need to go and have a look what draft picks I've got before I tell you where I'm taking everybody.
Well, I have 112 and 201, so good luck, buddy.
So the next receiver. So again, it's the same theme. A very productive receiver, a very, you know, solid. But for me, again, spectacular, and that's Amon-Ra St. Brown. So what do you think of him?
Blah. I mean, honestly, good size and body control. The separation's not there. I mean, he made his money on contested catches. Very good player, but much like Wallace, show me something that wows me. Show me something that makes me think that this kid is going to be a player. And honestly, if everyone wasn't so dang short in this draft, you wouldn't even really be talking about this guy. He is just a, you know, blue collar, go get the ball. And to be clear, I love him on my NFL team. We're talking fantasy. Brown is a great player for your NFL team, just like Wallace is. He's a guy who's going to show up and get the job done. Like, I like him as a football player. So I always like to make sure we separate the two. I think he's going to be a very good football player. I just don't think that his skill set is going to be one that is going to really explode from a fantasy perspective. And unfortunately for him, that's what we do here as we talk fantasy. So as a Patriots fan, I would love Brown to be on that team. Like, I would absolutely love – Amon-Ra St. Brown is like the – NFL player that I love. Like, they get dirty, get it done, you know, go get the ball when it's thrown to you type player. I think he'll turn out to be what some people thought N'Keal Harry might be, like a strong to the ball type player. But I just don't see elite skills. Like, when I look at Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, I just don't see a guy who gives me something that makes me think there's more coming, that makes me think, oh, well, at college he did this, but once you get him a pro quarterback with that skill set, watch the rocket ship take off. So I actually have him considerably lower than you. I think he comes in at number 9 for me in wide receivers. And even then, I'm probably going to end up dropping him more to like 10, 11, or 12 when it's all said and done. I just don't see the production that I'm looking for from Saquon.
Yeah, I think for me, I don't know what he's going to be at the next level. This is a guy that's mainly played out of the slot in college, has mainly, you know, produced well in college, but he's, as you kind of hinted to it, he's not an elite separator. And I think to play in the slot and be that kind of chain mover, you've got to be an elite separator. At 6'1", 200 pounds, is he going to transition to the outside? I don't know. But I don't want to really be drafting a guy that I'm basically saying, I don't know what he's going to be at the next level. And yes, a lot of it, you know, will come down to draft capital. I think, again, it depends if an NFL team sees him as a particular type and are going to slot him in. Maybe. But I just don't know exactly what he's going to be at the next level. And that scares me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's really where the problem is, right? Is when you look at St. Brown, like he's not good enough of an athlete to be a slot receiver. Like when you're talking to slot receiver, we had hinted on the guys that we're looking for. Get him the ball and watch him blow up.
Yeah.
That's not him. You're not looking for a solid catch the ball. Those are your outside receivers that are going to be your, you know, 8 catches for 75 yards. When you get to a slot guy that you're looking for in the NFL, you're looking for someone who can take it to the house, someone who can, you know, take that bubble screen and just go off with it. And he's going to get 7 yards on it. I mean, that's just who and what he is. So I'm not high on St. Brown. It's just not my caliber of guy. And I'm with you. I just don't know what he becomes in the NFL. I think it's a very solid football player, but not somewhere we can be a fantasy star.
Yeah. So back to more exciting players. This is a guy that I think I'm probably higher on than pretty much everybody else in the world, perhaps. And that's Tutu Atwell. So I'm guessing, Mike, you're probably not as high as I am.
So it's not that I'm not as high as you. Let's talk about the caveat here. Tutu Atwell is an athlete, man. He is an athlete. So I see what you see. So I'm not lower on him in that respect. What I do see is a project, though. And what I do see is somebody that I tend to forego in the draft or two for seasoning. I think Tutu Atwell is the type of player that ends up on your waiver wire in your standard home leagues, maybe not in the league that you and I are in. I'm not expecting you to drop Tutu because I know you're going to get him, not me. but in your standard kind of home league, thinner benches, maybe, you know, not as many slots available. He's a guy who ends up on the waiver wire week 4. And he is a guy who either in week 15 or in year 2 becomes what you were hoping for. So the reason why I'm not high on Atwell is I'm always looking for that year 1 burst. I'm a day trader. I literally flip half my, you know, I flip half my roster on the regular. So what I'm looking for is who can I cash in on early? Who can I make a deal with early to bring in somebody that has more long-term value? So while I might not be as high as you on draft time, you can be sure that Atwell is going to be either a deadline or an off-season deal I'm looking to make, a diamond in the rough type player. So what I'm most worried about with Tutu Atwell has nothing to do with athletic profile. It has everything to do with year 1 production. And I think he's going to drive coaches a little nuts because he's not that tactician. He's not that precise route runner. He is a freak athlete that literally explodes when he gets the ball. And I'm hoping for the best to be able to grab him year 2. If you remember like a Tyreek Hill, for example, you could get him for peanuts in his first year. And then all of a sudden, once they got him locked into here's what you do for a living, he exploded. I see Tutu Atwell as that type of player. And someone that's why I tend to forego in year 1 of the draft, because I think when you look at even those kind of plotter type running backs, the Stevensons, for example, I think will put up a better year 1 stat line than Atwell would, where you could then trade Stevenson and get Atwell plus from an inpatient owner. So that's how I play that particular athlete. But yeah, no, I see what you see in terms of athleticism. It's off the charts.
Yeah, I think the thing that appeals to me about Tutu is that you normally see these smaller elite guys that are, you know, blazing fast, fantastic, the ball in the hands. They sort of fall into one of two categories of they're either an absolute burner who can only go deep and catch literally screens and go deep and that is it. Or you've got them that they can just do the kind of the short, quick burst stuff, you know, your zigs, your slant, your kind of 3 to 5 yard stem routes. But for me, Tutu can do it all. I think he's one of these rare people that is able to win at all three phases of the kind of the field. And I think that his not only pure kind of speed, but his agility is going to absolutely terrify defenses. And I think that he is so unique in terms of his size and the way he plays. I can't see many teams going to have corners that can keep up with him in man coverage. And I don't think you're going to have many corners that are going to be able to get into position to manipulate him in terms of the physicality side, because we talked about the same with Elijah Moore. You know, you can scheme up that release. And I think once he's in the open field, I don't think people can get their hands on him. And I think, yes, I'm don't get me wrong, I'm hugely projecting here. I'm not expecting, you know, that he's going to come in week one and be a stud. But I just think that ceiling, you know, it seems everybody's chasing after the next Tyreek Hill. But that for me is Tutu Atwell's ceiling.
All right. Well, you were close. You only missed it by one person. So if you want to talk about the next guy, I am shocked that everything you said about Tutu Atwell doesn't apply and then some to the next wide receiver we have. So while I love your enthusiasm, I am going to say roughly the same types of things for the next guy on the list. So you want to go ahead and introduce him?
So the next guy is Jalen Waddle. Okay. What I would like to say is at the moment, Jalen Waddle is my wide receiver 9. This is my kind of pre-draft rankings. If, and let's be honest, when he gets first round and probably top 15 draft capital, he will shoot up to tier 3 alongside Elijah Moore. Okay, I want to caveat that. But at the moment, I see Jalen Waddle, and don't get me wrong, I see that incredible flash plays. I see those incredible kind of, you know, let's be honest, he's phenomenal. But I don't necessarily see the level of production that I've got from someone like a Tutu, and that scares me.
Sure, and I understand that. And I think part of when I look at Jalen Waddle is projecting what would have happened if it wasn't for the foot injury. Obviously, I mean, having to miss how much of the season, but when you watch the games that he did play, man, you want to talk about popping off the screen. I mean, this guy has a gear like I've never seen. It was almost like he was toying with people. And then he decided to run and it was game over. Like, I've never seen a player with that type of gear shift that you have with Jalen Waddle. Like, he is an absolute firecracker of a human being. Like, when he takes off, he goes. Now, I would have loved to see him, obviously, a full year. Would have loved to see the coaches get their hands on him, play him a little bit more, and see what he did without such a quiet, crowded wide receiver room. But even what you saw in 2019 and what you saw with the flashes that you got in 2020 from an injured player was the most explosive player on the field every single time he stepped on there. Like, there was no question about who was the guy that had the most potential to take to the house. It was Jalen Waddle. So for me, he's my wide receiver 5. I do think he gets that draft capital. I actually think there's a very real possibility that he is the first wide receiver taken. That is an absolute possibility, and I don't see him getting out of the top 20. So when you compare the draft capital between Tutu Atwell and Jalen Waddle, it will be significant. I think we can both agree on that. Atwell's probably looking more of like a round 3 or round 4 pick, whereas Waddle's probably going to be in the top 20. So when you look at a team that is committed to make this chess piece, and that's what we're going to call him, a chess piece, because he's not your prototypical wide receiver. And we're saying that a lot in this podcast, but it's true. These aren't typical prototype wide receivers. So when you look at a team that has this chess piece, this unique athlete, draft capital matters so much because of the egos of the front office, because of what you can expect for a snap share from somebody who's taken in the top 20, as opposed to someone who's taken as a day 3 or 4 pick, is going to be significant. So again, what we just talked about with Tutu Atwell, with that year one pop, Jalen Waddle has a far greater chance of year one success than Tutu Atwell, just strictly based on the fact of where he's going to land in the NFL draft, which will be, I would bet my reputation on, a first round pick. And I think that that gives Jalen Waddle, and we'll get to this in the rapid fire, so not to, you know, steal any thunder here, but that gives him, to me, by far the type of athlete he is and the draft capital he gets. He is the ceiling home run guy. And I think, honestly, if Henry Ruggs didn't end up with the Raiders, if Henry Ruggs didn't exist, we would be much higher on Jalen Waddle. And everyone is projecting Henry Ruggs' failures, which is both a case of Henry Ruggs' hands and the offense that he was drafted into. Everybody is now shying away from Jalen Waddle as if they're the same person. And that, I think, is a huge mistake. I think Jalen Waddle is a different player than Henry Ruggs, not to mention, I think that Henry Ruggs landed in possibly the worst situation he could have in the NFL. And I don't believe, and someone had asked me, you know, what Chase Vernon asked me, what would be the nightmare scenario for any rookie you're high on? To me, it was Jalen Waddle going to the Raiders. That would be a complete nightmare. I just think that he has to have a better situation than Ruggs. And to be quite honest, I think he's a better overall athlete and player than Henry Ruggs is. So I don't like that comparison. I think people are taking fast Alabama wide receiver and equating it to Henry Ruggs' failures. And if Henry Ruggs didn't exist, I think we'd be talking about Jalen Waddle in much more favorable terms in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess for me, and perhaps this is a question for you, Mike, do you see Waddle getting the volume of touches at the next level that he's going to be able to be an elite fantasy producer? Because yes, when he gets those touches, he is a home run threat every time he touched the ball. But I just don't know if I can see him getting 8-10 targets a game. I don't think he's going to be that type of player. And for me, that significantly caps that ceiling, because I don't know if he's ever going to be able to get the volumes needed to be that kind of truly elite performer.
I don't know that he will, but I also think that what you're going to see is a lot of old school DeSean Jackson box scores. Right, those 3 catches for 120 yards and 2 touchdowns. I think you have a chance of him getting you a quick 6 on special teams as well. I think he will be utilized as a returner. I mean, he has a ton of open field skill set. So I think it's going to be unique touches, but I think that he can make the most of them. This is absolutely a boom or bust type player. He's not going to get you what, again, we're talking about prototype wide receivers where you're guaranteed those 6 PPR points just on catches alone. No, you're probably going to get 3 from Jalen Waddle, but you get the ball in his hands 4 or 5 times a game. Watch him go. I think he could take it to the house. And I think the more he does that, the more he shows that early, the more you're going to see designs for him where you're going to see those 3 or 4 touches climb to 5 or 6. And I think that's more than enough volume for this type of athlete to make a difference on your team. And again, I think he's the inverse when we talked about with Tylan Wallace and Amon-Ra St. Brown, where those guys may get 8 targets and may catch 6 of them for 72 yards and 0.23 touchdowns a game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't love that type of player because it's waiver wire replaceable. But what I think you get with Jalen Waddle is a chance for your wide receiver 3 to win you the week on any given Sunday. The type, I think he, Jalen Waddle, I guess the best way to put it is Jalen Waddle, I believe, will be what all of these fools think Mecole Hardman is. Like, that's kind of the perfect scenario I think we'd put, is that everybody who's pining for Mecole Hardman, as if they don't have a massive upgrade of Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill on the same dang team. I think what everybody who is pining for Mecole Hardman, this is actually the player that you wanted. And that's Jalen Waddle. I think that's kind of what you're looking at with this type of player. 8 weeks, you're going to be thrilled you have them. 8 weeks, you're going to be miserable you have them. But for my wide receiver three, give me that potential to win a week over a guy who's just going to give me those bankable 6 to 7 points.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, you know, he's the dream best ball player, isn't he? Let's be honest.
Absolutely.
So the next guy, so number 10 in my rankings at the moment, that's Terrace Marshall. So the fourth best receiver out of LSU in the last few years. I guess for you, you know, he's 6'3", 200 pounds. So we all know that you're going to be much higher on him than I am.
It's not even that. It's just look at the game before he opted out. What was it, like 42% target share, 100 yards per game, 10 touchdowns. And then obviously you saw what the freshman did after he left, but did nothing before. I mean, he was the true alpha on LSU beforehand. Again, I wouldn't say particularly elite, but dominant production. Rough quarterback play too. Like when the one thing that you'll notice when you watch the actual tape on Marshall is, how many dang throws were 5 yards, 10 yards over his head? It was horrific to watch the quarterback play that he was dealing with and still putting up numbers. I think that he's a very good second option. And again, you're right. Team big wide receiver, 6'3", 200. I think there's a floor there. I think there's a floor with Marshall. But I also think that he's the type of guy who really, I mean, we were talking about Rashad Bateman, what, 35, 40 minutes ago?
Yeah,
and now we're getting to Marshall, who is a very similar player. Maybe not quite the release that you want, maybe not quite that jab step that Bateman has, but I think very similar type player where he finds himself in space, he goes and gets the ball. And again, for me, and maybe it's the novice in me, I see him as an NFL player. He looks like an NFL player. He projects very easily for me as opposed to these other guys where I'm not worried where Marshall lands. So when you talk about a pre-draft ranking, wherever he lands, he's fine. I mean, that's who he is. So I'm not worried about an old school coach, new school coach. It doesn't matter. He's safer than these chess pieces. He is a straightforward outside wide receiver. And I think, honestly, you're doing him a little bit of a disservice talking about what he did this year. If you just look at the 7 games he played, they were spectacular. The output was amazing. It was something like 740 yards and 10 touchdowns in 7 games. I mean, what else do you want him to do? And then he called it quits. He was on his way to a massive season for LSU.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is part of the thing with Jalen Waddle as well. I'm probably a little bit lower than I will be once draft capital's taken into to model and things like that. And look, he's a five-star recruit. That's always worth it. We know that means something to the NFL. And I think that, I guess, for me, I just think that looking at his film, I was underwhelmed. Perhaps it's because every time you watch him on film, for me, there's a more talented receiver on the field at the time, whether it be Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase in previous years. And I think Kayshon Boutte, you know, we're probably going to be talking about him as a potential top 10 pick in 2 years. I think he is absolutely phenomenal. And that's probably me being a little bit harsh on him, and that I'm watching film of him and all I'm thinking is that guy lined up on the other side of the field is much better kind of thing. I just think that the only reason for me he's being talked about as an elite receiver in this class is because of his size. And we've talked about it is a really small class. And I think that if you put him in, if you chucked him in with last year's class, I don't think he would have been in the top kind of 6 or 7. And I think that that's what's pushing him up this year is that lack of prototypical X receiver. And I think that he's jumped up and being pushed up because of that lack. And I just think, for me, I'm not blown away by his film. I think he lacked separation throughout the route. I think he's average I've got in terms of contested opportunities. And I'm not blown away. And I think that, yes, I'm probably a little bit harsher. As I said, he'll probably end up around sort of 7 in my rankings once I take into account draft capital. But I don't think I'll be ending up with a lot of shares come sort of May time.
So let's talk about the point you just brought up, though, is in this class, he's one of the few that projects to be a prototype X receiver. Well, that's a positive in the fact that when you look at last year's class, any team may have taken, and even the year before is probably a better example, any team would have taken a host of receivers, whether they had a need at that particular prototype X role or not. They would have taken them just because they're a prototype receiver. They wanted another weapon. Now, what happens with Marshall is when you have a team that needs an X receiver, you can see them stretching a little bit for Marshall. And what that tells me is targets. And targets equals goodness, right? So in this year, if you're a team that's starved for the X role, Marshall's one of the few options you have. So I think you could see him getting a higher than normal draft capital. I agree. Maybe he's not that pop off the page prototype prospect that you want, but he could very well land in a situation that gets him the targets that he needs because they don't have that type of option already on the team. So that could very much boost his value, not on skill set, but as we're finding, like we talked about with Terry McLaurin, who, don't get me wrong, is a very good wide receiver. But I think there are receivers in the NFL that could do more with the targets that McLaurin gets. CeeDee Lamb is the one that jumps to mind right now, that if you swap those two, CeeDee Lamb might be in my top three dynasty receivers, right? I mean, so that matters.
You don't need to talk to me about CeeDee Lamb. He is, very, very much team CeeDee Lamb on this podcast. I think he's my wide receiver five overall. And to be honest, I have to calm down that he's not even higher. I'm very much believing that he could be in a year or two, he could easily be the best receiver in the NFL.
Right, and put him on Washington now, and he could be the best receiver in the NFL next year. I mean, absolutely. That's what I mean by opportunities. So,
yeah. The one thing I guess I'd perhaps take a slight issue with when you're talking about his prototypical X, he's going to walk into targets. To me, I have a real thing that targets are earned, they're not given. And this is a guy that at no point through his career has earned a huge target volume. This is a guy that, when he was essentially the one wide receiver other than a true freshman lined up opposite him last year, he was earning 7 targets a game. And I just don't think that he's shown that propensity to be a true target hog. And I'm worried that if we're projecting him to be a target hog in the NFL in order for him to be fantasy relevant, that's a significant step for me personally. But as I said, I'm probably a little bit low on him than I will be.
So I think it was Derek Brown, who I was actually just on the open bar pod with, who opened my eyes a little bit to Marshall, where I actually put him a little bit higher. He had a great stat about the 7 games that Marshall played before he opted out. And I said he was actually a target hog in producing on those just in the games before he opted out. Now, obviously, Boutte became the receiver after he left. But when you looked at the target share in those 7 games alone, it was actually spectacular what Marshall did. So I don't think that he did anything not to earn them. You're right. He doesn't pop off the page, but I think he showed when he was getting a 40% target share that he was putting up triple digits on the regular. I see him as, when we talked about Amon-Ra St. Brown and putting him next to Marshall, they're a very similar player that I just think Marshall is a better option and even probably better than Wallace. When you look at it, the guys we've talked about before, I just think this is a guy who is going to do more with the ball if you get it to him. Someone I'm a little more excited about. Now, again, we've talked about, we're at the point in the draft where I'm not overly excited about anybody. Like I'll make some deals. And by the way, if anybody wants to give me, as I've tweeted out, Jerry Jeudy for any of these picks, all yours. No worries there. But I think this is a guy who probably slates a little higher than those two for me, but ends up in that group as solid, not spectacular. I just think he has a little bit more to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the final guy we're going to talk about. So this is, for me, this is the type of player that I just never roster, if I'm being honest. And it's Dyami Brown. To me, he's nothing more than a deep threat. I think he is a fantastic deep threat. I think he tracks the ball incredibly well. But I just don't like kind of starting those guys that need, yes, can win you a week with one catch, but you're relying on that one catch in order for them to produce.
Yeah, I mean, to me, when you're talking about the number 10 wide receiver in a rookie class, we're already down at about that, you know, early third round pick range, right? And I would challenge you this. Can you go ahead and take that third round pick and trade him for Will Fuller? Because if you can't, just take Divey Brown, because it's the same guy. It's the same exact player. I have never, and it was Curtis Patrick put out the comp. And again, I would love to be original, but in this case, it's too perfect. Like he's every bit Will Fuller without the glass hamstrings. And I kind of dig that. Now I'm with you. I don't tend to have a ton of Will Fuller because he lets you down a lot. But I think this is the type of player that for what you're drafting him at, the spot you're getting him, you're going to get a far greater return. Like, I think his value is going to accelerate more than others because he's exciting and because he's going to pop off the page a few times, right? Like, think of Sammy Watkins. If he had a Sammy Watkins week one, this kid's going to blow up, right? But Divey Brown is the type that I think is going to have boom or bust weeks. But what I love about him is your average player looks at the final season results, right? And that's what always elevates Will Fuller. To all you Packers fans, block your ears for a minute. Up until last year, that always elevated Aaron Rodgers as a guy who would hurt you five or six games out of the year. But the final season stats looked great. Sammy Watkins, who we talked about, would get half of his yardage in week one, but he'd still come out with that 807 stat line that you look at and say, oh, that's cool at this point of the draft. I think Divey Brown's going to do that. I think he's probably, even early on, is probably going to have three or four games where he's going to pop because that's what he is. He's going to get loose. He is early years DeSean Jackson. He's Will Fuller. And to me, I will take that over these whatever receivers that are just projected to, you know, have a Bryan Edwards type season where may not even see the field. You need a big score. This kid's going to be on the field. Get it to him deep. I like that more than what I'm getting for some of the other guys that we haven't covered. Plain and simple, when you look at a Dwayne Eskridge, for example, I just would prefer the guy who could pop. So I'm big into this guy. And to be honest, now that I'm even talking to you, 10 might be too low. you know, just kind of thinking it through, I might move him up right below Terrace Marshall and ahead of Wallace and St. Brown. I think I just talked myself into it. So let's go ahead and move him up to 8. I like that more than the guy who needs the volume. I just don't see many of these rookies getting that volume. And I think one of the things that I've seen a lot of discussions on is the wide receiver position in general. And we have to stop talking about wide receiver two, because all of a sudden these wide receiver threes are outstanding wideouts, because the NFL is getting so flush with talent at that position, where I think a guy with a unique skill set like Divey Brown is going to stand out more than a St. Brown or a Wallace might, because there's so many players of that caliber already in the NFL doing what they do and doing it better than they do it, that I think I'm going to start looking for more of the uniqueness, which Divey Brown with that deep threat can get him on the field.
Yeah, he's going to have, you know, Djax is, you know, been around for a long time. I think he's probably 12, 13 years into his career, and he's still going to have a spot on the roster next year because he can get deep, because he's got that one meat thing. And Divey Brown's going to hang around in the NFL because, you know, everybody, you've got a shade of safety over the top, because if you stick him one-on-one with a corner, he's going straight past him. And any time you've got a receiver on the field that commands two people over the top, you know, you're winning that numbers advantage. So that concludes, I guess, our kind of wide receiver overview. So we're going to dive straight into the quick fire round, Mike. So the wide receiver with the highest ceiling.
Jalen Waddle.
But yeah, I guess, yeah, hard to disagree. As much as I'm not a Waddle fan, I think if we're painting that sort of once in a blue moon scenario where everything kind of lines up perfectly, he's such a freak athlete that he could be incredible. Wide receiver with the highest floor?
So I strayed away from the obvious answer, and I went with Bateman on this. You know, obviously, I think Chase is the guy we both want to talk about, but Bateman's the guy with the highest floor. That's not my top wide receiver.
Yeah. And wide receiver that you'd bet your life on?
That's Chase. In this draft class, he's the only one that I'd be willing to risk any large sum of money, never mind my life, on is Jamar Chase.
Fantastic. And what about, so, best player at cost? So obviously you've said you've been doing a lot of mock drafts. So where's this guy going?
We covered this. It's Elijah Moore. Elijah Moore is going mid-second, and I can tell you in the draft that we're in, you're probably not going to see him get past 201 if I keep that pick. So that's obviously a pretty big boost for me. But Elijah Moore is the guy that I love as the best player at cost right now.
So this is your way of telling me that I've got to trade up and get the 111 if I want Elijah Moore.
Or you could trade with me, as you know.
Fantastic. And then your favorite sleeper within the class.
That's Sage Surratt. So to me, the biggest thing that I'm looking at is trying to take advantage of the situation that we have with COVID. And I think people just forget how much this guy produced. Obviously, he's coming at 6'3". He's a lot more of the prototype wide receiver than what we're seeing in this class. And I'm getting him in the fourth round, which I think is almost wildly unfair. I think he had played, you'd be talking about him in the same breath as like a Terrace Marshall, Tylan Wallace type, but you're paying prices where guys are drafting players. They don't even know what their names are. They just happen to be there in ADP. So I'm not saying go out and get Surratt as a player that I'm necessarily targeting, but in the late third, early fourth, you're not going to find better value than that, which I think is how I tend to encompass a sleeper. I don't want to just give you a name of somebody that's already going 205. This is a kid you can probably get, early fourth that could produce that late second type talent.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a guy that, to be honest, I completely agree with everything you said. As a, I'm a Georgia fan. I was very excited. Jamie Newman coming across, obviously that didn't quite work out. But when I was watching the film with Jamie Newman, it seemed every time, there was a play being made down the field, it was the rat. And it certainly piqued my interest, shall we say, sort of a year ago when we were coming into the season, obviously, with the opt-outs and everything like that, it didn't progress. But yeah, I was very excited about him a year ago. So thank you very much, Mike. It's, I've had an absolute ball of a time. It's been fantastic talking through the guys. I hope everybody listening knows a little bit more about this class as we're heading into rookie drafts. So where can the people find you, Mark? Where can people see your work?
So you find me at Daddy's Home FF. Honestly, though, if you're looking for great fantasy advice, go to fantasyintervention.com. We have such spectacular writers. We have a whole Debbie group being head up now by Jeff Bell, for whom Jeff Bell tolls. On Twitter, we have Jacob Sanderson, Canada's smartest man, and also one of my favorite people. We just have this spectacular group of folks that honestly make me look good. So I will tell you, I have a little bit of fun on Twitter, but if you're actually looking to get smarter and get better, I can recommend every one of our writers. They are so spectacular, so hardworking. So check those guys out. That's really where you're going to get your good advice.
That's awesome. It's, I've been over there several times, had a look at the stuff that's getting put up. It's truly fantastic insight, fantastic work, and certainly learning a lot from the content that's being produced. So by all means, guys, go and check it out. Well, thank you ever so much for joining us, Mike. It's been an absolute ball. We'll be back next week with Ali, Ali Cook, also known as FF Dynasty Grill on Twitter. We'll be breaking down the rookie tight end class. But thank you ever so much, guys, and we will see you again next week.
HIV epidemic is not over. HIV is still here.
The face of HIV is so diverse.
The biggest thing to reduce HIV stigma is just to talk about it. Testing and PrEP and HIV treatment and how effective it is today.
Undetectable equals untransmittable. Whether you're positive or negative, there's not a wrong door. Whether it's testing or whether it's treatment, do it for you, Montgomery County.
Learn more about HIV testing, treatment, and prevention at doitforyoumc.org.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.